including the members of parliament. You are all welcome. I think before we start, we will have to just have a quick introduction of from the minister's side, because I think we have been introducing ourselves for far too long. Even myself, I'm not in a position to tell you where am I by now. I will ask you guys to quickly introduce yourselves so that we can be in a position to know who is who in the house. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members and everybody else in attendance. We'll just introduce ourselves as requested. So my name is Felisa Wakala. I oversee the Department of Public Enterprises and its entities at the office of the AG.
Morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Vicar Sianza van Heemskerk, Executive at the AG's office.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Alex Filippo, and I'm the lead audit engagement partner for the Transnet audit.
Good morning. I'm Nkanyi Songa-Bobesa, one of the directors responsible for Eskom.
Good morning, members and chair. My name is Dinyiko Plawi. I'm on the Eskom audit as well.
Good morning. I'm Neil Tlipzani. I'm from Auditor General.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Tsalo Flagati. I'm responsible for the Eskom audit.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Humphrey Machade from the Office of the Auditor General. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Gemina Demana from the Auditor General Office.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Penny Rabwezi and I'm from the Office of the Auditor General.
Good morning, honorable members and chair. My name is Donkul Nabatitfan from the Office of the Auditor General.
Good morning,
honorable members of the chair. I'm from the Office of the Auditor General.
Good morning, honorable chair and members. My name is Risha Kristani. I'm also from the Office of the Auditor General.
Honorable chair and members, good morning. My name is Nombi Nima Tomela. I'm from Eskom.
Thank you. Members, is there any apologies?
Okay. Good morning, honorable members. Apologies I've received is from Ms. Mazzone, who held in this morning, or won't be able to join us for the day, and Dr. Ngozi is attending a funeral and will not be able to come today.
Well, that's apologies, members. I think we still a few quorum. We will have to get the briefing from the Auditor General on the outcomes of the annual report and financial statement of eight of the companies. Who is going to be helping us? Okay, thank you, Ms. Zogala. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair, the slides have been circulated ahead of time and they're also projected on the screen for us to follow. If we move on to the next slide, Chair. So this is our reputation promise, our mission statement, so to speak. And it sets out what we as the Office of the AG are tasked to do. We are tasked to, amongst others, enable oversight, equip you with good insights from the work that we do as a constitutional institution. So we do that by auditing and reporting, firstly to the entity itself and the other oversight structures that oversee those entities, this particular committee being one of those structures and committees. So, Chair, it is no different that we, you know, the purpose of why we're here today, we're here to enable you, to give you insights and to interact with you, answer questions as far as we know, to help you in your oversight work. So our role in the BRRR process, Chair, we understand you're in the process of putting together the report for this particular portfolio. So ours is to reflect on the audit outcomes for the past cycle, like you did say. So we're going to cover the department and the seven entities that report into DPE, all in, again, in an effort to equip you with good insights and information of what is happening in the entities, and for purposes of you approving this budgetary review and recommendations report. If we jump into the outcomes themselves, Chair, so just to remind the committee, our annual audit covers three main areas. So the first area is the actual annual financial statement. So what we check there, from what the entity and management will give us, we want to check that those financial statements actually are valid, they are accurate, and they are complete. And we call that fair presentation. So we look for any misstatements, we will look for any errors in those financial statements and bring them to the attention of management, all in the effort to make sure that what gets presented and passed on is actually a full reflection of the entity. Chair, the second area that we look at is performance information. So this will be linked to the actual mandate of the department or of the entity, where we interrogate the objectives that are set for the year, and we basically actually start by interrogating the plan. Was the plan actually in line with the SMART principles? Did the department set itself some targets that were SMART, specific, time-bound, measurable, and so forth, and then we report accordingly. And then at the end of the period, once they give us that, the annual performance report will check what they're reporting as the achievements against that plan. Is it true? Are they not over-reporting or reporting things maybe to make themselves look a bit better than they actually is? And then we'll bring any errors, we'll bring any mistakes to the attention of management again to please adjust and make sure that what is presented eventually is actually a true reflection. Chair, the last area that we'll look at is compliance with laws and legislation. As the department, as the entities do their work, we want to check that all of those transactions are actually done in accordance with the applicable laws and legislation. Primarily, this will be in the area of procurement. As you know, I think besides salaries and wages, that is the main area that the money is really the public sector. We procure so that we can do service delivery, so that we, our businesses can function and grow and deliver on their mandate. So having looked into those three areas, Chair, then we will issue opinions. There's five different opinions that we can possibly issue on an entity. The first one to our filer, the green, being what we call a clean audit. By clean audit, we mean management and the board gave us financial statements that are believable. If they didn't, the issues and the errors that we pointed out to them, they were able to take them, correct them, and at the end of the day, we had a set of financial statements that's actually a fair presentation. And also, when we look into the areas of performance reporting, it is actually believable. And when we look into compliance with laws and legislation, actually the entity complied with all relevant laws and legislation as they went about doing their work and doing their procurement, as an example. So when we go into the yellow one, which is the financially unqualified and findings, there we say that the entity actually did produce credible financial statements, but there's issues either in the second or the third area. So in the area of performance reporting, perhaps some of their plans were not, you know, aligned with the SMART principles. Perhaps what they actually reported as their achievement is not true, and they were actually not able to correct and actually reflect the true status of things. And then we'll highlight those material findings, and then it will lead to a financially unqualified with findings opinion. It could also mean that perhaps the performance reporting area once reported accurately, however, they struggled complying with the relevant laws and legislation as they went about procuring, as an example. And they will highlight those material findings, and it will lead to a financial and qualified findings opinion. A qualified opinion chair, the purple one, the one in the middle, it means now there's something wrong with the act itself. It could be one line item, it could be two, it could be three. So we'll highlight as an example, if you are not able to fully reconcile your fixed assets, as an example, and produce a figure that says this is what is valid, accurate, and complete, those assets that you are reporting, R1 billion, as an example, everybody can believe that there's R1 billion worth of assets. If for some reason the entity now is not able to prove that you've got R1 billion worth of assets, then we'll qualify that line item and actually point to the user that item, don't believe it as you see it because there's some misstatements, there's some errors into it. Chair, when we look into the other's opinion, it means actually the act themselves, again, have issues, but it's more than one, two, or three issues. The issues are actually pervasive throughout the financial statements, and it affects quite a few line items, and it then renders the entire set of financial statements unbelievable in a way. And the entity would then struggle to reverse and say what would actually be the right figures to put in these financial statements so that people can believe what they read on the entity. This is undesirable indeed. And I think the last one, Chair, is the disclaimed opinion. The disclaimed opinion is where the entity now, is where other auditors could not find sufficient appropriate evidence to support what you're reporting. Either the documents were destroyed, either the documents went missing, and then we will lift our hands as auditors and say we cannot issue an opinion in this case. This is the worst case scenario, and I think it sabotages accountability, sabotages transparency, check, and this is the worst kind of opinion that we can issue as an office. So, Chair, we jump to the next slide. When it comes to the public enterprise portfolio, Chair, again, we should be reporting on 8 entities. That is the department and the 7 entities reporting into DPE. However, today we are talking to only 5 auditees. The 3 auditees, which is SAA and SA Express and Alex, who are not included in these outcomes, we will outline a bit later why they are findings or outcomes are not in this text that we're talking to you about today. And Chair, just to follow the arrows that we'll be using, when we use a green arrow pointing upwards, we're pointing to an improvement. A yellow arrow pointing sideways, we're saying there's been a stagnation there, Chair. And then we talk to a red arrow pointing downwards, we're pointing to a regression. Chair, when we communicate with our stakeholders, we like to use this accountability wheel. So you'll see at the center is the accountability, and we move to the second quadrant there, which talks about planning. So we believe if everybody in the chain does their work as designed and as they are entrusted to, accountability will be achieved in the public sector. So we believe there needs to be very robust and credible plans in place, whether you're a department, whether you are an entity, and actually make sure those plans align again with the smart principles. Make sure your plans actually are specific. Make sure your plans are measurable. Make sure your plans are attainable, they're realistic, and they are time-bound, so that whoever is measuring you, instead of you saying, I did well in the last year, you did well against what? So those plans need to be credible and very, very detailed. Chair, then there needs to be action against those plans, and the action needs to be underpinned by a good system of internal control. So we do not operate in a vacuum, we operate in a country with laws, we operate in a public sector with prescripts around how we should procure, as an example. So all those prescripts need to be adhered to as we go about as management and the board go about doing their work. That would be the third item there. then Chair, we believe in the chain, there needs to be people who come and check and monitor. That's typically your internal auditors, that's typically your external auditors, where we also fit in as external auditors, to check what management is actually reporting. Is it the true state of things? And also to point out any, you know, maybe misdoing in the process. Maybe somebody did not follow the layout process as designed while they were doing. And then will those people, internal audit and external audit, should be in a position to highlight those as they check the work. Then Chair, quadrant number 5, if anything against those plans and doing that falls amiss, there needs to be action, whether it's through gross negligence or whether it's through malicious intent, people deliberately manipulating accounts or reports, then there needs to be action for a lack of responsibility. And Chair, we believe if everybody does their role in this chain, there should be better outcomes, there should be better audit results, and ultimately leading to a better life for the citizens of South Africa. So Chair, having talked to the accountability wheel, now we'll bring it closer to home and talk about the public enterprise portfolio. So we did point out, Chair, that the department is in the middle, and reporting to it is 7 entities. These operate within various industries and sectors. There's some in transport, logistics, that would be your SAA, your SA Express, Transnet. There's one in the defense space, that would be Janelle, manufacturing defense equipment and solutions. And then in forestry and resources, we've got Southcoal and Alexco. And then as the power utility sits in the country, we've got Eskom. So if we track, Chairperson, the audit outcomes over the last 5 years of these 8 entities, you will see if we start from 2014-15 up to the last cycle, I can say there's been a regression if we look to it. 5 years ago, we had Janelle and SAA sitting as clean audits. Similarly, the next year, another 2 audits, though they're the same ones. DPE came out, you know, the department is a clean audit, and the rest of the departments have either been stagnant or really just regressing. You'll note SAA Express regressing to a disclaimer from 2016-17, which continued in 2017-18, and for this year, we're pointing out that SA Express audit outcomes are actually outstanding. So when you read, Chair,
I just want to check something. We all have the same presentation, but I noticed that this one, which I think all members have, it's not a full reflection of what we have there. There are pages that are not there, that are here. Can we all have this recognized as a cost to complement this? Because I'm using both. I was looking at you, and you seem not to have this at all. Honourable members, I was sorted now. Thank you. You can continue. Continue, sir. On this one, for the thicker one, we are on page. We are here on this one. Thank you, Honourable Members. You can continue, Ms. Soran.
So when we are on slide 10, members. So when we look into the last 5 years, so we'll see there's a slight regression in the outcome. and if we look into 1890 chair, we're pointing out three orders that are still outstanding that we're not talking to today. Danel is red. It was stagnant compared to the prior year. Danel is reporting a disclaimer. ESCOM, Tuscol and Transnet is reporting a qualification in DPE. So the qualifications at ESCOM, Tuscol and Transnet are all driven by an inability to fully quantify the number of irregular expenditure. So these entities, as they were doing their operations, incurred some irregular expenditure, but there's been a struggle to actually come up to what that number should be in totality. So they share that that scenario, those three entities. Danel is disclaimed, like I said. Danel, I think the quality of their financial statements has been quite poor, with various qualification areas that we can talk to a bit later in their financial statements. Chair, SAA, SAA I'll talk to a little bit later, and then SA Express and Alex are also not included here. When we talk to Alex Core and SA Express, so the audits of those two entities have been concluded from our side as auditors. We audit as Auditor General, we audit SA Express, we audit SAA, we audit Danel, and we audit SACO. The rest of the entities, ESCOM, Transnet, and Alex Core are audited by private auditors, the rest of whom are sitting here with us today. So the audits of Alex Core, like I said, and SA Express have been done and concluded. However, the AGMs have not been held for both those entities, and consequently, their financial statements have not been tabled in Parliament by the executive authority as required. So hence, those outcomes are not before you today. And then, I think, Chair, we've been communicating with DPE, we've been communicating with, we met with the Deputy Minister actually just yesterday, bringing to his attention, you know, the status of things and the fact that they, you know, what is going on, because we also have a duty in terms of the PAA, where we are required to then table whatever reports that we've done and concluded within a certain period of time to Parliament. So that, as this House, you can also see our work and the outcomes relative to that entity, so that you can do your oversight. Chair, when we come to SAA, SAA has not submitted annual financial statements for the last 2 years for audit. So the last year, or the last audit report for SAA you see will be relating to the year 2016-17. And I think, Chair, we all know subsection 55 of the PSMA, which talks to the fact that the board needs to prepare a set of financial statements, submit them to the Treasury, to the Auditor General, 2 months after year end, which is the 31st of May, for audits. However, this has not happened at SAA. I think we know some of the issues, the going concern issues at SAA, and so forth. So the matter is an audit office is escalated to the board themselves. I think there's been a few letters escalated to the board to say, please rescue and arrest this situation. There's been correspondence to the executive authority itself, Mr. Gordon, around the situation and the dire consequences that it has, because it does hamper oversight and governance when people do not know what is actually happening in an entity through non-submission or non-publishing of annual financial statements. So, and we're saying in the next bullet, Chair, until we get those answers, and audit officer hands are tied, we cannot conclude, we cannot issue an opinion on the annual financial statements of SAA. And then we say, and therefore these audit outcomes for 2017-18 and 2018-19 are not included in these presentations today. Chair, when we delve into the first area that we look into, which is the annual financial statement, Chair, we just wanted to point out to the committee that in terms of the submission rate by the legislature date, which is the 31st of May, we did receive all apps by that date, except for Danel, which submitted the annual financial statements late, which was the 31st of July. And luckily, the audit team could catch up and we could do that audit and sign it and finalize it in time so that it can be included in these outcomes today. And then, Chair, when we talk to apps that were submitted without errors. Unfortunately, only GPE could submit a set of financial statements that were without errors. The rest of the entities, Southcall, Eskom, Transnet, and now, submitted apps that had errors, material errors and that, and a lot of them could not correct all of the statements in those apps. I've already spoken to the note on irregular expenditure that at least three of the entities were not able to quantify and actually disclose properly. So the top qualification areas, Chair, is the irregular expenditure, which is prevalent at Eskom, Transnet, prevalent at Southcall and Denau. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure is at Eskom and Denau. Chair, when we go to performance reporting, this is the second leg I spoke about earlier. In terms of performance reports that were submitted without errors, again, only GPE can give us a report that was without errors. The rest of the entities, unfortunately, had errors in some statements in their reports. And after our audit, only DPE again emerged with a quality APR that did not have errors. Southcall, Eskom, Transnet, and Zanel remained with some statements in their APR as disclosed in the annual report. So there at the bottom, we just summarized those messages, Chair, where we say reliable reporting of achievements could not be substantiated at Southcall, Eskom, Transnet, and Zanel. And there was a problem of usefulness, those smart principles I spoke to earlier at Eskom, at Transnet, and Denel. So this will talk to the objectives that they set for themselves, and this will talk to the indicators and the targets. Okay, we jump to the third area that we look into, which is compliance with laws and legislation. You'll find in the top, in the right hand side, the top five non-compliance areas. So just about all the entities except DPE struggle with doing business, their business, in line with the applicable laws and regulations. You'll find problems with procurement and contract management at Eskom, at Denel, Transnet, and Southcall. The quality of the apps were an issue at Denel and Southcall. Prevention of irregular fruitless and wasteful, an issue across all of them, except DPE. Consequence management was an issue in those three, Eskom, Denel, and Southcall, and revenue management in terms of collection of revenue as it falls due was an issue at Eskom and Denel. And Chair, your call, these are all linked to Section 51 of the PFMA, which entrusts the board, the accounting authority, with all these requirements. They shall set up a system of procurement that is fair, equitable, and so forth. You shall produce quality set of apps, you shall prevent irregular, you shall do consequence management when things don't go according to plan, you shall collect revenue as opposed to. However, they fell short on these five areas. Chair, when we talk to the biggest internal control, I think this slide will summarize a lot of the things I've spoken to earlier. You'll find in DPE mostly falling within the green there. Which talks to their processes, you know, throughout the year, and then Eskom, Transnet, and Denel falling into the yellow or the red, and I think it does talk to some of the slides. We can delve in a bit later if the committee would want. So here we cover proper record keeping, where we're saying there's problems at Eskom, Transnet, and Denel, but sometimes we could not find requested information and documentation when we requested. Daily and monthly controls, not evident in state Southcall, Transnet, and Denel. Review in terms of monitoring compliance, a problem for all the entities, and then risk management, fairly all the entities being on the green side, and that would talk to, do they do risk assessments, do they have a fraud prevention plan as an example. So you can see a lot of the preventative measures are in place, but are they always effective? That will be another question. Chair, when we talk to the assurance providers, we look into senior management, we look into the accounting officer or the board, we'll assess the executive authority's oversight over the department and entities, we look into internal audit and audit committee. You see the assessment chair there, I think Eskom and Denel again falling into the red there when we say they provide very limited to no assurance there. I think the quality of the air and some of the issues we've spoken to will be evident there. And when we talk to the boards, all of them will say they do provide some assurance. The executive authority provides some assurance because even though he's overseeing all of them, I think the majority of the entities fell within the qualification of disclaimer. Antenna ordered, there were some issues at Denel, serious issues at Denel and Transnet. I know Transnet did not have an internal audit function for some time. As external audit, sometimes we will rely on the work of internal audit. However, if there's no reports done, there's no work done, then it means we have to work a little bit longer, a little bit harder than we would have had internal audit done some of the pre-work and we could actually rely on their work. Similar issue at Denel as well. Audit committee, there's the assessment there for the audit committee. Okay, if we jump into the financial health, I think this is something that we read about almost on a daily basis as well, relative to the SOEs in South Africa, particularly those that fall into this portfolio. So, Chair, as auditors, we're required to assess the going concern any time we look into those areas. Management also must do their own assessment. And any time we find some uncertainty, some indicators that show that this entity is actually a little bit sick. They can't sustain their own business on their own. They either need to borrow to fund their operations, or they need some bailouts all the time from the state, then we will point out those issues in the audit report so that the users can be aware of the real health, financial health status of the entity. So that lenders, for example, or you want to transact with the entity, then you know how healthy financially it is. So Chair, we're just pointing to a few indicators that Eskom's current liabilities exceed their current assets, exceeded their current assets at year end, 31 of March. And Eskom is reporting losses, and then there's a heavy reliance on debt to sustain their liquidity situation. Transnet, we've highlighted or emphasized ongoing concerns simply because some of their covenants do not require for them to actually have a modification of their audit opinion. However, they did this year, and that could trigger some loan covenants being called upon, the money of which they do not have as we sit today to service those covenants should those lenders use and actually revoke that clause. So we say should all those loan covenants be in effect, Transnet would not have that money as they sit today to actually service those. Denel incurred a loss and in the current year we're reporting on, and it's still projecting some losses for the year ahead. So Chair, just to summarize some of the key financial indicators for the entities, when we look into entities where we can call them liquidity issues because their current liabilities exceed their current assets, this is now talking to liabilities that you need to settle in the next 12 months and the resources you have to settle those. So Eskom is not in a position to settle those liabilities with their existing assets at the moment, so which talks to some liquidity issues. And then, Chair, when we talk about deficits for the year, or losses, Denel, Eskom, and Sasol reported losses, or deficits only Transnet would report a profit. When we talk about debt collection, Denel and Eskom struggle to collect debt as they fall due from their customers. I think in the Eskom case, we know about the issues with some municipalities and some geographies around South Africa. Chair, when we talk to fruitless and wasteful expenditure is expenditure that is incurred in vain and could have been avoided had reasonable care been taken. In other words, there was no value for money for this spend. So Chair, we're pointing to some 1.1 billion rand in this current year, but we need to bear in mind that figure excludes SA Express, SAA, and AliExpress. So Chair, compared to 79.8 million rand in the year prior. So what is this 1.1 billion made up of? So the majority is driven by a take-or-pay agreement at Eskom, where they were required to take or pay for coal. However, they did not take delivery of the coal due to not having a contract in place for the transportation of that coal to the Midupi power station, and therefore they were required to pay for coal that they did not take possession of, and that's 522 million rand. Danel incurred in this year some 176 million rand in interest and penalties on overdue accounts. Transnet also some half a billion rand there around poor contract management as well as some redundant assets and stock that had to be written off. So that's the makeup of the fruitless and wasteful we could identify so far, Chair. And then in terms of, you know, what is happening now with that with the investigations around that fruitless, so there's been some that has not been investigated as yet, both at Eskom and now. Yeah, to talk to irregular expenditure, as we know, is the expenditure that is incurred in contravention of the law. However, it doesn't mean that goods and services may not have been delivered. You may have received goods and services, but the prescribed processes were not followed. Chair, we're reporting some 86 billion rand in this year for irregular expenditure across the portfolio. Again, this excludes any that would arise if there's any at SA Express or SAA or AliExpress. And the majority of that 86 billion, Chair, is arising from at Transnet. This is related to the 1064, the 95, and the 100 locomotive transactions that Transnet entered into a few years ago. Chair, that figure needs to be compared with 31.4 billion rand in the prior year in irregular expenditure. What is the nature of this irregular expenditure? So, Chair, some of the examples there is entities not following a competitive bidding process when they were required to. There's a certain threshold that once it's reached, you need to actually put that tender out for people to actually compete for it, and you actually as an entity can get value for your money. That wasn't always done in Eskom and South Pole and General Transnet. Chair, Eskom, there was evidence of, you know, them incorrectly classifying some of the emergency procurement. There's a clause that cause you to deviate if you are in an emergency or you need to actually use a sole supplier. So, you know, we found some incorrect classification of and use of that measure at Eskom. And Transnet, there was some non-compliance identified with the PPR. And Chair, some non-compliance with their own supply chain management policies at Eskom and Denel and SEPCO. And there was some modification to contracts, about 15%, that were not approved by the Treasury as required at Eskom and Denel. And then Eskom and Denel were also found to be transacting with suppliers that were not tax compliant. So those are some of the examples of the irregular, Chair, and you'll find some not investigated in at least three of those entities. That'll be SAFCO, that'll be Eskom, that'll be Denel. Just to dwell again on the supply chain management, so we are pointing a stagnation here, if you know, rather than an improvement, in the sense that there's still only one entity that is steering clear or is complying actually with the law when it comes to procurement. So again, just to highlight some of the most common findings, not being able to, some of the difficulties we found was not being able to audit procurement due to missing or incomplete information. This was evident at ESCOM's denial of transparent, uncompetitive, and unfair procurement processes. Were evident at ESCOM, SASCO, denial, actually all four of them. And then the PPR system not being applied or being incorrectly applied at all four of them. So I think, Chair, just the entities need to just monitor their knowledge and just their compliance when it comes to procurement. At the moment, it's not being a pretty picture. So when we talk to consequences, again, this is a requirement of the PFMA, that when there's been lapses in what we're supposed to do, then consequences need to happen. When we look into some allegations that were not investigated, there was some evidence of not all allegations being investigated at ESCOM, and some of those happened at an accounting authority or even at a board level. And at Chair, and there was also some evidence that disciplinary steps were not always taken against officials who incurred irregular expenditure as required, again by Section 51, which would guide what everybody's responsibilities are, particularly the board. So if we summarize quickly the portfolio then, we did not report on the three, again, just to remind as a committee, one dream audit this year compared with the prior year, which is the same audit DPE. Only one audit could produce financially unqualified financial statements against DPE. Only one audit with no findings on performance report, that's DPE. Again, only one audit with no findings on compliance. Again, irregular found so far this year is 6.2 billion rand, last year 31.4 billion. Chair, when we look into the root causes, I do not think there would be any difference to those we highlighted prior. Generally, Chair, we find a slow response or to respond with the required agency to some of the risks and the internal control deficiencies that we so point out in this environment portfolio. So, and then, Chair, when we talk to the culture, we find not all officials being held accountable for their actions, and we believe such behavior then tends to be acceptable and tolerated, and others feel if they fell into the same set of circumstances, perhaps nothing would happen to them as well. And, Chair, also the instability in key positions in the entities is a root cause for us, because you find a competency gap, you find an inability to follow through on commitments made prior, whether to this committee or even to ministers and so forth. So that continuity and that traction gets lost anytime somebody new comes and adds, and somebody leaves and somebody gets appointed. So there's a great instability in the leadership of the SOEs. In terms of recommendations, just to the department and entities, again, this will loom to the root causes. We are recommending timely consequences for officials who deliberately or negligently ignore their duties. Chair, we're recommending that there should be the required agency to respond to our messages from management and also the executive authority to address the rest. Chair, we also recommended that there should be some stability in key vacancies. Of course, that cannot be fully, you know, controlled to some extent, but we believe if it is addressed, then it can solve some of the instability. To the portfolio committee, we're recommending that this committee should monitor the implementation of the commitments that are made by the board from time to time before it and by the minister in terms of arresting and actually remedying some of these outcomes. And Chair, we're also recommending that the portfolio committee should request management to provide feedback on the implementation of the and progress on the action plan so that there could be some improvement in the outcomes. Chair, just to summarize again the last few slides, so overall so far there's been an overall stagnation and some can even argue a regression in the audit outcomes of this portfolio. Chair, whilst the DPE achieved the clean audit, all the entities in this portfolio either qualified or displayed. And there was also a significant increase in irregular expenditure this year so far, 86 billion rand, And again, we need to remember that some entities, three entities actually are excluded from that number due to some of the drive to clean up irregularities from the past ETF transnet. And here we also pointing out that a lot of the entities in this portfolio struggle to sustain their own financial viability without support from government. A lot of them rely on bailouts. A lot of them rely on lenders giving them money or extending their debt. This is something that compromises their own operations and their own financial viability, and to be able actually to fulfill their mandate and maybe even compete with other entities in their sectors. And Chair, we're just pointing out that the non-submission of F by SAA for the last 2 years needs urgent attention. And we've pointed out that we've written to the board, both the previous board that left and the current interim board chairperson, to please attend to this matter. There's been correspondence to the minister himself to please assist in this area. We also highlighting this to this committee. In terms of some of the things that we do as an office, rather than just pointing fingers, some would say, Chair, we do what we call status of record reviews or any warning systems. This we will do in year and come and help the entity. If you had a witness, for example, on PPE, we'll come and check how far you now to correcting your PPE, as an example, and give you, findings. But those findings won't form part of the audit report as yet, because it's not an audit, per se. So those are some of the things we do. Chair, there's frequent engagements with oversight. We will engage with boards, chairpersons of boards, audit committees, ministers, all to raise the alarm around what is happening and for them to be aware. And Chair, there were regular engagements, like I said, with accounting officers and authorities. And then our AG, as you know, will do his roadshows when the results come out and talk to the recommendations. He will do media briefings and so forth. And Chair, we also do capacity building initiatives to structures like yourself when you call us, so that we can give you maybe even detailed information that you can use as you do your oversight. So that's
the presentation
so far,
Chairperson.
And it over to you.
Okay, thank you so much. But before I give to the members to ask questions, just want to check whether there are other external auditors present here, which companies there.
Yes, so Chair, we are accompanied by some auditors from two firms, that's SNG Grant Thornton and Obani. Obani audits Alex Cook, but like you said, those results are not here today. And the SNG Grant Thornton audits ESCOM and Transnet. So they will be able to field any questions and answer those two entities.
Thank you so much. I thought I was able to check so that your members as they are not only confined to you, those people who are directly involved in this particular issue, they can come up. Members, I think it's your turn now to ask questions. That is Honorable Chabalala, who is there? Or you want to propose? Or you to prepare yourself while Honorable Chabalala is there. Okay, Honorable Zuma. Okay.
Alright, thank you, Chairperson. Let me appreciate the presentation from the AG. Look, it starts by locating what is the role of the AG and so forth. So we appreciate that. But I want to get to Pairs, your role with your assistants to be put procurement for that matter, and there is no change. So I need to find out one from yourself that who are the warm bodies officials that you deal with. I'm sure when you do on that audit, there are officials that you deal with, whether you see it all, that's also that process of the timeline. Who are those officials? I'm not saying mention their name, but I would like to think those are the people that you have to deal with. You mentioned there was an issue about the other not being able to table or being audited for that matter, the denial, on the basis that they could not correct the material mistakes that were found by yourself for them to go and correct. Now, and as you mentioned as well, that they attempted to come to you and give you the report late, so you couldn't really handle. But the question of it is that I need to ask that what do we do about this? Because I like to think these are the people that know this is what is compliance, they need to do this at a certain stipulated time. What then do you do in this instance? Do you let it go? We come to us, people have not submitted their financial statements, and it is bad. Life continues, we can't take another financial year. I mean, the implications of those things are dire. So I'm just saying from both parties, besides you just auditing, we need to know how far can you really go insofar as holding accountability. Well, under the issue of the law, the PFMA, we need to table audited financial statements and PFMA. And you just mentioned that there are three that is not tabled. And look, they table an account who gets through the executive to the speaker, and speaker will grant the extension. That is two consecutive financial years. So per the PFMA, I need you as a financier to be able to advise this committee. What is the punitive on the basis that there's no tabling that happened? We don't see the records of the statement. What is punitive if there is? If there isn't, just tell us there isn't. We can just leave it and we'll go until 5 years perhaps without tabling. And the issue of accountability becomes a serious point of departure. Those who are dealing with issues of finances were in this mess nowadays on the basis that we're not able to account each and every resident that has been utilized, the public coffers that has been able to bail out this institution. So if they can't account on their finances, how are they getting this money? And what makes us say this is how much we really need? Do we even understand the intensity of the trouble? So for my side, I need to ask that question. If you can just assist us, I understand that you are assisting us, but so that we're able to give you the frustration when we deal with the department, we're able to be proactive in how we interact with them. ESCOM debt collection. You would appreciate that ESCOM, the issue of them collecting, then unable to collect, whether it's municipal debt that's going up and rising, national departments, businesses, it's different people that are generating or rather are using the power itself. Did we highlight that as a risk here? I didn't catch it fully. So that even when we're speaking about them not being able to deal with their books, we're able to reflect that issue as a red flag from all spheres of government from where we're sitting, that ESCOM is getting into a mess daily because everybody else is also involved in making this ESCOM not to be proactive or functional the way it's supposed to be, including residents for that matter. We know the issue of whether any other debt from any other debt. So I just wanted to just check in your, did you highlight that as a risk, and what are the recommendations that you are really giving on that? I need to know what is the AG's recommendation on the issue, because it comes from national and going downwards to everybody else who is not paying ESCOM. When your audit, if there are specific persons, I think I've asked the question that you deal with, what is the punitive measure that you're dealing with. Financial health status of the entity when you audit, and you could see that it does reflect in your recommendations as such. Do we go in when we audit with an attitude that says, we know that this business will be able to rescue, we know this business will be able to sustain, we know in the coming year this business will be able to function? when you go in and you look at, you keep on auditing this, you can see this company are in dire financial crisis. What do we do? Do we continue auditing? And the next one is auditing. Because the recommendation for me is that really not at the instance. Perhaps it's the limitation of the law. You can cite, really try to assist us as an oversight body, be able to empower us to be able to really give recommendations that are able to have some consequences. I think that's my issue. I mean, as well as go to sit here and receive reports, we come back and receive reports, we interrogate. If nothing is not being done about whether there's an official not performing, people coming up, when you lack of capture, issues of finances, supply chain management is a problem in companies, everything that something must really give. Can the AG also take some recommendations that has to speak to? Can you release such and such an official? Because this person is not assisting. And yet they're getting bonuses and so forth and so on. I'm just breaking you so that you're able to assist us to perform better our oversight in this instance. But I welcome the report. Thank you. The recommendation.
say anything to say after we've audited, after we've rejected all the things that was done, then what is it that we can do, all of us, to get the end result, even if that would mean dismissing people, making people to pay for whatever that the vision is. For now, Chair, thank you.
Mine is to perhaps really just comment and to welcome the presentation and not to ask any form of pointed questions. I think the first thing that we as politicians need, we need to take a decision on this very important matter where there are state-owned enterprises that keep on coming to us for bailouts, but they don't produce financial statements. On what then do we base the bailout? I mean, SAA was here last year, and there was a special appropriations given to them. I think it was 5 billion rand, if my memory serves me well, because we're experiencing financial challenges. But we, it's almost like, you know, a multiple choice. If you go into a multiple choice or try to answer a multiple choice without having actually prepared or started your work, it's like making a blind choice. It's exactly what we do as Parliament when we keep on dishing out bailouts to institutions that have not submitted reports that would enable us to make proper decisions on these issues. So we are partly to blame for this problem. It's something that we are trying to address at the political level. But I want to ask, I don't know whether this applies, but the Public Audit Amendment Act, number 5 of 2008, does give the Auditor General, I think it's section 5B or 5A and 5B, which was inserted last year, where it gives the Auditor General powers to, when there are material findings of irregularity during audits, to public bodies for further investigation and to compel accounting authorities to take appropriate remedial action. It means it took away, the Auditor General in the past was able to back, but really not, did not have the powers to bind. How do we use that? How does the Auditor General's office in future use that in order to ensure that there's proper accountability, but also reduce the level of irregularity? Link these powers together with the point I'm making that SOEs that come to Parliament to ask for funding should not be given money until their books are in a good financial state. Otherwise, if we do that, if we continue to do what we're doing, we are merely rewarding and reinforcing negative behavior. Because what's going to happen is that they will have to account at some point for the money given to them last year, and will wake up 3 years later and realize that the wasteful expenditure was 90% of the amount given to them. And all of these challenges. But I think the other issue is to say to the office, perhaps, is to help us. Look, you were talking about the current ratio, the liquidity ratio. My understanding is that if it's less than one, then it means that it means exactly what you're saying, that your current liabilities exceed your current assets, right? Meaning you have a liquidity problem. But when state-owned enterprises come and report to us, they never give us a true picture of what that ratio is. They will always talk about it in broad terms because they don't want to give us the correct information that will be able to help us be able to make those decisions. Perhaps it would be in future to also get more information around those issues so that we understand the degree of the liquidity problems facing some of these entities. I don't know, maybe Chair, at some point as I conclude, it is to try and build an even closer relationship with the Office of the Auditor General as we try to turn around or help these SOEs to turn around. Because we need to have this timely information so that whenever they appear before us, we are able to hold them to account on the issues that they are failing to do. I think the time for us to blow kisses at them has expired. Because some of them, especially some of the managers of these institutions, have been in the system for a while, more than a year. By now, these SOEs should be showing signs that they are indeed turning around. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I've got just two questions, just for clarity. The one in terms of slide 10. If there is scope of an irregular expenditure which couldn't be quantified, then my question is, what does it simply mean? Does it mean it couldn't be quantified in terms of how much money it is or whatever that it may be? The second question is with regards to the entities which couldn't submit their financial statements. If they do submit in the future, could those statements be trusted as credible, or it could be like cool statements which seek to satisfy the process, but they can't be trusted? Because I can't imagine an entity which can fail to submit a statement for 2 years, then tomorrow it submits, then I have to believe that that is true, or that should be something I should trust. That's the credible information. So if she can also assist me in that. There is also something in trust in terms of the accountability we that you spoke of. You say, as far as you are concerned, where do you think things start to go wrong in terms of that whole chain as AG? Thank you.
May I also join the colleague in this matter? Thank you for the report. The time it enables us to go deeper and understand the challenges that some of the SOEs are in fact facing. I want to believe that Honorable Shabalala did ask this question, but I'm saying as a matter of emphasis, let me as well ask it. You mentioned that DINEP submitted the report very late, right? The late submission, could that have influenced the outcome of your findings as the auditor? And secondly is, do we have other matters that may have contributed? Because I'm saying the question that he first substantiated by saying was it for the late submission, which in fact is caused by, according to your understanding, it's the deadline, because they failed to meet the deadline. So as a result, because of the deadline, then at least the rest they could have been given a disclaimer. Or do we have any other matters that could have influenced the outcome of the audit finding? The second question is, which I believe is what she asked, is if a company, an entity like DINEP receives a disclaimer for 10 times, right, when do we say the organization is no longer a viable organization that could not serve? Perform, or it is not your mandate to proclaim such a pronouncement. The other one is, I'm not being personal here, and again, I'm not questioning your professionalism, but it would be interested, who else confirmed your findings? What you said is just final. No one else can say query and say A. Because at times, the subsequent question could be, can some of the findings be influenced by what perhaps as a person you know about the entity? Let's say you go and do something and there is an information that you know. For some reason, perhaps the entity may not have included that. Because of your knowledge, then whether you give them an unqualified or you give them qualified, could it be the fact that DINEP, because I've seen something, but you've mentioned other things, could it be that the disclaimer is because Enel failed to fulfill its commitment? Because I understood that there's 250, but you have mentioned something like 170. But let's say, for instance, we know that, that at least there is a commitment that Enel did not fulfill. Should that be automatic that let them make them to get disqualified? Having not reconciled, because you said to us what you presented or what they presented, they could not substantiate. There is no period in between, not unless the next financial year, that some of the things that they may have done wrong or have not perhaps submitted, get an opportunity to submit them and then perhaps review data. I'm just asking because we are talking seriously. My colleague next to me was just saying some of the mistakes as politicians that we do, we keep on sort of giving them bailout. I want to believe what colleagues say this. I want to believe that if, even if I have a child in faith in something, but it is my responsibility as a parent to make sure that the child is good. So I won't say because now the child is not healthy or whatever, then I say I discard the child. They are not supporting and not maintaining the child. So we've got this commitment, and especially the mandate of all the SOEs that we have up until they fulfill the mandate, then they satisfy the politician. But a blessing wait for
I don't want to assume that everybody wants to speak without having an indication of the head. Honorable Lamidi wants to speak.
Thank you, Chair. in the food and waste expenditure, this is for 2 years. What is the auditor doing for 4 days? Because if you see at Transnet, there is a 507 million food waste for this Transnet. What is the audit's advice about this? Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Members, but I also want to ask almost a similar question with my colleagues. In the light of your recommendation, in fact your overall message, the department has consistently having these three clean audit outcomes, but the contrary, the entities under the same department continues to have this deteriorating audit outcomes. Now, looking at your recommendation, I don't really find out some form of a recommendation that tend to tell us what is the real problem there. Perhaps the department is supposed to oversee these things and they are able to deal with their own. One person was telling me, no, perhaps it's because the department is too small, and I said the ALESCO is also small. But the outcomes are like this. Now, I just want to check exactly, as auditors, what do you think might help us to resolve this problem? What is it that the department is doing for itself but is incapable or is unable to deal in these entities? What is it that they are not able to do in on the entities but they can do for themselves? I thought I'm expecting some kind of a recommendation.
that seek to talk to that particular problem. The other question also related to that. Do you perhaps believe that it is the regressive or the outcomes on these entities are due to poor performance only of the management, of the current management? Perhaps do you think that these regressive kind of outcomes are related to the actual big challenge that is haunting all these entities and the Zondo Commission is dealing with? Don't you see perhaps a relationship with the problem that we have in the Zondo Commission, with the problem that was looking at most of the management, including the governance in these entities? Most of these people are new. For example, especially the governance has just been, others have not even finalized in some of the entities. And the people who are actually responsible for this damage might be smoking their cigars somewhere.
The first question was around who are the members that we interact with. Can we mention their names? So we interact right across the organization, honorable members. Primarily, yes, we'll deal with the CFO to oversee the entire audit so that he knows what we're finding out and he can explain what's happening in his financial. But we're able to talk with everyone right through the chain. But I think the person that is entrusted with overall to make sure that these processes are in place, the high people are in place, the high policies are in place, is the board. So we always take our conversations back to the board. So that section 61 is quite powerful, Chair, if we read it. Because it gives you powers and it also gives you responsibility in the board. As an example, you must, disciplinary action must be instituted when irregular action is found. Set up a system of, make sure oversee that there's a system of internal audit of financial and risk management. So we take it back to the board and as an example, even the financial statements that we audit, unless they are approved and given a stamp by the board, we can't receive them. So that's the main person that is required there. And then there was a question around what do you do now as a committee around the late submission? It is a catch 22, Chair, because I do understand the minister actually did write me to the speaker explaining, the predicament that is in, particularly around Alex Coinsing Express. So for us it's to operate within whatever legislation or framework that is there. And at the moment it does allow for him, if he's not able to table by the 30th of September, to write to the speaker and to say, please, I won't table. And then for us, like you pointed out, where we've been able to do and complete the audit, we have certain powers as well, again, to enable oversight and accountability to say, we hear you, Minister, we've engaged you, but we also have a responsibility in terms of our PAA to actually now go ourselves as the agent table this audit report ourselves. So that process can happen as it happened as it has happened before with some entities. Chair. I think my colleague Alex will talk to the ESCOM debt collection and the recommendations for the committee around people not paying their debts. Then there was a question around financial health, how do we continue auditing? So I think, Chair, in terms of our mandate, so ours is to, let me said in the ratification promise. I was just to audit and report. So we can't say just because we've been getting, I don't know, clean audits forever, we won't come. We expect another clean audit. Or if we disclaim forever, we won't come. We expect another. We have to audit. We have to give the people the insights. And if the issues are growing, you need to know. We owe you that. Or if the issues are getting less, we have to know as well. We owe you that. Year after year. And then, Chair, there was a request for what are then the recommendations around this financial health, because it is continuously deteriorating, bailouts and so forth. So for us, I think just about all the entities that are sitting in this category, for what you call turnaround plan. But our evidence, or what we've witnessed, is that those turnaround plans, honestly, a lot of them do not take traction, just do not take off. You find this new CEO comes in and he puts very nice plans around the business, operating model, and before you blink, and then he's gone. And then, you know. So, you know, that traction and that stability in leadership then becomes key around looking the same person in the eye, you know, maybe for 4 or 5 years and even longer, and say, but sir, you said this 5 years ago, I need to see it now. So that instability does affect and hamper good oversight and traction around some of these things that I chair. I think my colleague Fumulani will talk to some of, you know, the PAA amendment, the powers that, you know, the US is giving us, particularly the MI, and what has been the experience there. Chair, there was a question around quantification of irregular expenditure. So management, and who is responsible to do that? So management, as they prepare the financial statement, is supposed to quantify and say there was a loss there in that area. We did not give, I don't know, maybe we transacted with suppliers without tax, without their tax affairs being declared or not being in order. And it is to the tune of $500,000. So if you're unable to say that and disclose properly for purposes again of oversight, it becomes a problem. Because the notes, the financial statements also form part of your financial statement. Slide number 12. So this was talking to SAA. Slide number 12 was talking to SAA around the non-submission. So I think they say, like you said, we've done what we feel we can. And now we feel like it's up to the other powers that be. So for us, you know, as an assurance provider, you know, we wait until we're given something, like I said, stamped by the board, that we can audit and issue an opinion on. And in the absence of that, then we feel like if the board cannot do much more, or if the minister, then government needs to come to the board and say what is happening with this entity. Unfortunately, we're not able to say close the entity, or manage the entity, or do something else. We get given what to audit by government. So if next year we get given a merged SAA with an SA Express and Mango as an example, we'll audit that. So it's up to the government to make some of these calls, and particularly in light of what's been happening. Chair, there was a question around who else confirms our findings. So, Chair, so I think that's a good question. So, we audit in accordance with what's there. The framework, the legislation, the PFMA is there, fortunately, for everybody to read. IFRS is there for everybody to read and understand, and the Companies Act is an example. And these are the prescripts or the foundation that these entities are auditing. So, Chair, I'm happy to say a lot of the time you'll find entities actually agree with our findings. When we say your books do not add up, they say, yeah, I know, and you're able to show them, you know. So they know a lot of the time they do not disagree with our findings, Chair, which means where sometimes we have disagreements and robust disagreements. And a lot of the time, if you go to the three that have been qualified, ESCOM, Transnet, and SACOM, if you sit across them and you know, ask them as an example, have you been able to quantify everything that you should have disclosed in that note? A lot of them will tell you, no, I have not been able to. So that is the order process that we follow, Chair. So in terms of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, I think I'll allow my colleague speakers to take that one. There was another question around the role of the board on slide 15. Speakers can take that one. There were some questions around ESCOM. The relevant auditors, they can take those ones. Thank you. I'll stop there for now.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Just on the before Kamisho come in for the escort question and Alex come in for the fruitless transit question, I think one question also relates to what do we do after the audit? Do we just walk away? I think the critical for us is for our entities we do a debrief related to the audit results. We meet with the executive authority in terms of also sharing the results and getting commitments to show improvement. We do also engage the board and all the committees around the recommendations going forward and commitments in terms of how do you resolve these qualifications. So we work quite closely during the year and during the interim audits and through the status of records review like Melissa has mentioned. Track progress, give recommendations, look at action plans, give input to action plans. But there, the independent lines come in where management and managers come back to us and we audit them. When the final audit comes, the recommendations have to be implemented. So during the year we can provide the recommendations, we can track, but at year end when the ask comes we have to audit an account for those. So it's, I think, critical. One other point was made around the nail around the late submission and what are the other factors around that. I think for one, we all know around the denial of instability in regard to the CFO position. The CEO position has been filled quite late in the audit process. And as a result of dealing with historical issues, you look at also the season of the prior year. The late submission obviously got an impact where you submit late and you submit improved results because you took more time to give us apps of better quality. In the Nell's case, I mean, that didn't work out because you submitted late and still the disclaimer of opinion was issued. You get scenarios in our entities where they submit apps late and the results is improved water outcomes. Those are the two questions that I could link, that I could answer. I think Melanie will answer the Public Audit Act question, and like I said, ESCOM's questions will be answered by the Commission, and Alex can answer the transit question around the personal age of experience. Thank you.
On the Transnet matter, and the question being raised, what happens to the fruitless and wasteful expenditure? So at Transnet, 507 million in particular was raised, the honourable member. So fruitless and wasteful expenditure is, in fact, expenditure that's exactly like the name says, it's wasteful. So we've spent money as a state-owned entity and we've received nothing in return. If we look at the 507 million being referred to at Transnet, there's assets that have been purchased to maintain that have never been used. So in addition to that, there's contract management. For instance, you pay for software licenses that you're not using. So what we do as auditors is once that's been reported on, we'll follow up. So at the next year's audit, we'll follow up and say, okay, well, you've identified 507 million in fruitless and wasteful. Was it as a result of illegal act? Was it as a result of poor management? What were the consequences that management have taken and those charges of government have taken? So when it comes to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, as well as irregular expenditure, it's now management's responsibility to go and analyse the root cause of that. And where there's a potential for recovery, you need need to go and recover the funds. And that we monitor when we go in afterwards and say, okay, well, last year you reported 50 billion in irregular expenditure, for argument's sake. What have you done? Have you investigated? Did you deem it to be fraudulent in nature? Have you identified what the root cause was? Once you've identified the root cause, what have you done about it? And that consequence management follow-up takes place. Now, I think also just to add, from a trial context, Chair, you raised the question of the regressive outcomes and as a result of past events that the Zondo Commission is taking a look at, etc., etc. The reality is, yes, it is. When you report expenditure. Now, there's contracts that have been entered into 5 and 6 and 7 years ago that you're spending money against now, so, and you will continue to be spending money against it next year and the year thereafter, etc. So yes, and a lot of this irregular expenditure is as a result of contracts that were entered into in the past. And unfortunately, the reality of it is as long as the money is being spent, that number will be there. As far as outcomes, I mean, suppose it depends on how you look at it. The more that gets reported, are we saying is more coming out of the cupboard? And that's also a positive thing, is to say, well, you know, it's coming out. On the other hand, though, you are still sitting with a qualification that says not everything is out yet. So there is that risk that there's more that's going to come out. But while the money is being spent, it's irrelevant when that contract was entered into. Whether it was entered into by the new board, the old board, the reality is the money is being spent now. And while the money is being spent, it will have to be reported if that contract was entered into irregularly.
Chair, on ESCOM, I think one of the questions I asked was related to collection of the revenue that is due. What ESCOM has done in the past would have been to go to court, as an example, to implement the processes when they are covering some of the revenues. But you do find cases where legally they have gone through the processes, but it hasn't materialized that the money has come in. Or they have engaged with the municipalities, signed agreements about collection of that revenue, but those payment terms are not honored. So there are numbers of cases where they have implemented the process, but it has not resulted in them receiving the money. So what you then see in the report is that we note that the revenue that was due was not collected at all times. As for the recommendation to this committee as to how ESCOM can then be assisted in relation to their revenue collection, I think the methods that you find is that where in the money that are due by programs of state, I think the government can look at that and see how best you can deal with that part as a starting point and then move it to the other instance, because it's within your control. In terms of quantifying the irregular and fraudulent expenditure, what is expected of an entity is that they should have records where they monitor irregular expenditure, they monitor fraudulent and wasteful expenditure. So when we come to audit, as auditors, will then ask for a population. We are saying, tell us all of your irregular expenditure that you have disclosed, and then give us information that we can evaluate. What we then find that makes us not to be able to quantify is that we do not have a complete list of that population, which then says we are not able to then assess whether the information that has been reported is complete. So that talks to the inability to then quantify the irregular expenditure. Now, who is responsible for that part? It's management who has the responsibility of reporting
on their regular expenditure. The issues relating to the financial viability of ESCOM, I think, yes, ESCOM's current liability is fixed assets. You have current liabilities of around the current liabilities is about 108 million, and then the current assets is about 68 million. So if you look at that, that is almost like two times more than what it's meant to be. The issues relating to what causes some of the liquidity challenges, yes, is the money that have not been collected, but it's also the fact that ESCOM is over indebted. As ESCOM was in the process of building some of the power plants, they entered into loan agreements. Some of the interest that you bear on those loan agreements, during the course of construction, you can put it as part of the construction cost. But as some of them have now been put into operation, now all of those debts need to be paid up. There's also the issue about the repayment of these loans, which is now coming up. So that causes some of your liquidity challenges. You then also have, I think, the last part is that in the terms of the ESCOM has lodged a dispute with NERSA about the revenue calculation, because they believe that the revenue that was allocated by NERSA is not in line with what they had, is not in line with the processes around the MIPD. So we await that court processes.
Okay, good afternoon, honorable members and honorable chair. Regarding the expanded mandate of the Auditor General, I took note that the honorable member was making a comment around that, but I think it's very important that we also reiterate the principle and the objectives that we're trying to achieve, or that we're trying to achieve when that expanded mandate was legislated. So the existing legislative framework in South Africa provides an accountability framework that ensures that there are accountability consequences for wrongdoing. And the Auditor General's report were just some of the tools that we needed to be used as part of that accountability framework. That once we have come out and reported these irregularities or these undesirable outcomes, one of the institutions, one of the role players within the system, this framework, will then take that up and do something about it. So there have been a lot of questions over the years where the AG will be coming out and saying, these are the outcomes, but the commentary will be, but what has happened? The AG keeps saying the same thing over and over again. So this accountability framework that we're talking about starts within the entity, as the public, the PFMA and the citizen provide, that the board is tasked and mandated, obligated to make sure that whenever there's wrongdoing, they do something about it, they investigate and take action. So the AG's external powers only comes in where that accountability process has failed. Where we're saying, according to our audit that we've done, they are finally telling us that there are material irregularities, and these irregularities need to be dealt with. And that's when we start directing that something must be done, either by referring those irregularities to a public body to investigate, either by directing the accounting authority to do something about it, and or directing that the accounting authority is therefore liable for the losses that would have been incurred by a result of their failure to implement proper accountability processes within the institution. So it is actually that the, as the AGSA, we would like to come to work in an environment where we would not have to issue a certificate of debt, because the environment would be automatically implementing that accountability framework as directed by the legislation. Thank you.
Yes, I think there was one or two that were still remain open. So there was a question around what do we do, you know, practically as a committee. And I think that's a question that we also, as we come here year after year, you know, we struggle with. We try to give you something more detailed. However, we have to stick with what's there. So I think in terms of practical, you know, steps or things that the committee could do is maybe just one or pick a few things or maybe a theme across the what you call the entities that they struggle with. Monitor those meeting or appearing or briefing after briefing that the entities appear before you. Teach certain key ratios that mean something to you. You know, stay on those ratios and request and demand and watch them improve for the entities that you are particularly looking for. So I think breaking down what you oversee, and oversight can be broad, but breaking down what you want to oversee, what you achieve, is this committee over the next 5 years might require maybe just break things down into little chunks, as you say. This is the meta that we will quarter after quarter when this entity comes in. I want an update on this one. I want an update on key positions, you know, around this position, around this portfolio, as an example. And then, Chair, there was a question around the acts of SAA when they came out. I think indeed it's a concern that we share that perhaps those will be obsolete and maybe of very little value when they finally come out, because we're sitting in the 2019-2020 financial year, but still acts for 2017-18 are not out. So that is a concern. And then, Chair, there was a question around the accountability wheel. Where do we think things actually start to go wrong? I think it's actually on that action part. So when implementing consequences takes a bit of time and actually sometimes actually not even triggered. So when things go wrong, there needs to be a sitting down to say where did things go wrong, who was behind this. And I think there's various initiatives around government, which is an example. I mean, there's a sort of commission that Alex spoke to, the members spoke to, but at a local level, at an entity level as well, that's sitting down and honest conversation. Why did things fall down and what are we going to do next about this, as an example. So I think I would pitch that definitely on the action part. So there was a question around DPE. What would be our recommendation around DPE? What it continues to enjoy pre-orders, but the entities are qualified or disclaimed. So I think that's a very valid question. I think the department will appear before you shortly. And I think, Chair, if you go through their annual report as well, particularly page 31 and page 32, where they report on some of the things that they plan to do, that some of them were not necessarily achieved. I know in this year that we're looking at was maybe even the year before, the latter part, a lot of appointing new boards, replacing boards, this and that. I think, again, the issue of stability is there, then we might start to see some of the traction around some of the things that they are trying to put in place around overseeing and monitoring the entities themselves. And I think another mechanism for this committee is when the APTs are put in place in front of you by this fund, which actually interrogate it quite in detail and see, will it give you what you want to see? Is there a particularly, I think, program 2 and program 3? You know that, you know, I feel the committee can spend a bit more time just to interrogate and really demand more from the department if you wish. Thank you.
Thank you. You're done, Mr. Okay. Honourable members, I think almost 1 o'clock now, and unfortunately, even if you wish to turn the second part, the situation doesn't allow us now. Honorable Tennis, you want really to say something? Because that's one question that I didn't get the answer for, which related to the mental issue of the president, and asked whether when they submit at the stage, can we charge those statements as credible?
Okay, take
that around. Okay. No. The non-submission of financial statements for some entities. Because I'm asking this question in relation to the fact that
In terms of those irregular expenditures that you cited, you could get some documented proof to those. Then you find that they are not submitting their medical expenses for some reason. And when they do it at a stage, can we trust those expenses to be true?
Yeah.
Or it could be like they've been cooked just to satisfy the process.
I think, Chair, when it comes to assessed threat and alleged fraud, once the minister has been able to table those annual reports, you can call us, we'll come and we'll brief the committee on those, and then we'll give you our view on whether those have been available or not. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, members. Thank you, Auditor General team. I think now we can release you. Oh. You'd like to have this one? Okay. Honorable members, can you...